Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Monday Morning Podcast. I am your host, Gary Gramling. We have lots more free agency to get through. We got through some of it last week, but really not the bulk of it. We're going to go through some of the big stories here. I am going to bring on a very special guest to join me, and I'm going to bring him in right now. Andy Benoit, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Gary. Hey, I'm well. How are you, Gary?
I'm good. We made it through the week. A silly week for a lot of reasons. But yeah, the NFL just, they push forward this thing. New league year came and they just sort of hit the gas and, I don't know, gave everyone something of a distraction here, I guess, in the end.
Yeah.
But
I enjoyed it, to be quite honest with you.
It was. I do hope people still paid attention to what they're supposed to be doing, like, you know, social distancing and not going out and licking things and not going out to bars and whatnot. But I hope this didn't distract from that. But it was nice to have it going on during the day, especially for those of us who cover the league for a living. We got to sort of, have something to do while we work from home. Lots of stuff to go here. We had plenty last Monday, and then obviously Albert on Wednesday and Connor and Jenny on Friday had some more. But we are going to start this show with a look at the all-new, totally different AFC East. Just a complete facelift for like all of these teams here in the AFC East. Up is down, left is right, hamburgers eating people here in the Northeast. And let's start with a team that I am quite fond of, and that is the Buffalo Bills. And I know, especially after people saw the DeAndre Hopkins deal, I know people looked at the Stephon Diggs trade and said, like, boy, they gave up a lot. Wow, that's a lot to give up. I still love this trade. I think Diggs is absolutely a number one receiver. He's one of those guys who's not huge, so you don't think big catch radius, but he does have a huge catch radius. I think he's going to be absolutely perfect for Josh Allen in that offense. And if you want to see if Josh Allen can take the next step, this is the kind of guy this offense needed.
Well, and I understand why people say, oh, well, you paid a lot for Diggs and the Cardinals didn't pay as much for Hopkins. In terms of draft capital, the difference is Diggs' contract compared to what Hopkins is reportedly asking for, Diggs is pretty affordable.
He is.
I think his cap number is about $12 million a year, if I remember, I'll pull it up here. But, and Hopkins, I think, is the better player than Diggs. You could probably do a little more schematically with Diggs, though, because he's a more dynamic mover than Hopkins. So when you factor in that his cap hit this season is at $12 million, yep, and this season's 11.5, and then $12 million the next few years, that's a very affordable rate for what I think we both agree is a true number one wide receiver. That's several million lower than what Hopkins was reportedly wanting. So that's the difference in the trade values for the two. And if I'm Buffalo, I understand why they did it, because they really don't have any other needs on offense, Gary. They had their offensive line back from last year, and now that they re-signed Quentin Spain at guard, Allen is where he is in his development on his rookie deal still. And the rest of the receiving core is intact. I mean, this was the only thing they needed at all on offense.
Yeah, and look, I know a lot of people were looking at it and saying, hey, why don't they just use that first-round pick on a receiver? The nice thing about Diggs, along with the relative affordability, is he's pretty much a sure thing. You know what you're getting in him. I know everyone's really over the moon, I believe is the term, as far as this year's receiving class goes, and that's good. And it might end up being a historically great group. I always think back to the 2004 group that everyone thought was just going to be incredible. I'm just bringing it up here. They had seven first round receivers go. Larry Fitzgerald was one of them, and that's fantastic. But then you got Roy Williams. Okay, pretty good career. After that, you got Reggie Williams. You got Lee Evans. Lee Evans had a fine career, but Reggie Williams, Michael Clayton, Michael Jenkins, Rashawn Woods. Those guys.
I don't remember Rashawn Woods at all.
I mean, he was the 31st overall pick of that draft to the 49ers.
Wow.
You know, we always kind of lose track because everyone gets really into the rookie wage scale and the low salaries that come with these rookies. But you got to remember, it's difficult to project them. Some of these guys will not work out. They will not live up to the billing. So for the Bills to sit there in the latter third of the first round and think they're going to get an absolute sure thing, they weren't going to. But in Diggs, you get pretty much a sure thing at this point.
Well, what's also true, and we're going to talk about them, I'm sure, in a minute, is the big bad boys of that division that Buffalo's in. They've never been weaker than they are right now, at least not for anybody in this era, certainly the Sean McDermott era or the Pegula family era for ownership. The Patriots are as vulnerable now as they've ever been. The window's now, and I don't think you can sit there and assume that the Patriots will remain vulnerable. History, I mean, we don't know what they'll be without Brady, but your bottom line is you're a playoff team a year ago. The guys ahead of you, the one team ahead of you, is weakened. Your window is right now.
Absolutely. No, I absolutely love this trade here. And like you said, Nate, they have a bunch of receivers who are nice complementary weapons. None of them are number ones, and that's what the issue was last year. But, you know, John Brown and Cole Beasley as your second and third receivers, that's suddenly a pretty strong group there that they have in Buffalo.
But both of those guys, by the way, were much more diverse last year than you would have guessed. Beasley he's obviously predominantly a slot receiver, mm-hmm. but he is not just only a slot receiver. They use him in a few different ways. Same with John Brown. Diggs can line up anywhere in the formation. So they have three pretty interchangeable quality receiving weapons there.
We will get to the Patriots, but let's go with the Jets first here. Now, everyone knows the Jets had to invest in the offensive line, and I know a lot of people there wanted Jack Conklin or some of the other headlining guys, Joe Tooney, who obviously got franchise tagged, Brandon Scherff, another guy who got tagged in Washington. They end up settling for it's a lot of guys. These are just a lot of guys. I don't know. I will sort of lay this out for you, Andy. They bring in George Fant from Seattle, who is sort of the swing tackle sixth lineman in a lot of their sets. Connor McGovern comes from Denver, and Greg Van Rotten. I almost called him Rotten. That's not a nice thing to say. Greg Van Roten from Carolina, and I would imagine so. McGovern surely will start at center. Van Roten, I think you would pencil in at right guard. It depends on what they do with Brian Winters. I think they're going to move on from him. They did re-sign Alex Lewis. So you might. And now I imagine they will also use a first-round pick on one of these tackles. It's a very good but very top-heavy tackle class coming in. But I would imagine left to right, you're probably going Fant, Lewis, McGovern, Van Roten, and maybe Chuma Adoga. Maybe Fant moves to the right side, or there's a competition there if they bring in one of these rookies. It's two of the rookies I think you'd plug in on the left side, two of them on the right side. So it depends who they take. But I don't know, Andy. Is this a better group than last year? I guess you can't get much worse than last year.
Yeah, they struggled last year at times. There's no question about that. It's I mean, it doesn't strike me as a particularly enthralling group, but, you know, you don't need that necessarily along your offensive line. I wonder, with the money they paid George Fant, Gary, I mean, George Fant's getting his cap number this year 7.25, which is, that's not bad for a left tackle if mm-hmm. that's where you're going to play him. 9.4 cap number next year, no guaranteed money. 10.6 cap number, no guaranteed the year after that. So they basically they're going to see if it can work out with Fant, and if it doesn't, it's a one-year deal and he's going to be done. So maybe they will draft a tackle. That's a lot of money to spend on a guy who's going to be a swing tackle, and he's not going to be your right tackle because Edoga's there, and that's what you drafted him to do. So I was just, the Fant contract's a little blurry to me. I can't tell if this is a contract for a guy that they think will be, if they're going to give a fair shot to this season. If they don't do that and they're going to draft someone like you suggested into top-heavy draft for tackles, that's a lot of money they spent on Fant to be what amounts to their number three tackle, unless maybe they feel he can play guard or something. I don't know. And Van Roten, to me, is a plug-and-play type of guy at best, and there's some questions about him. I agree with you about Winters. Overall, it's a very average offensive line overall.
I'm sure they'd love to have average after last season. Yeah, I wonder if there's going to be a Fant-Edoga position battle coming up here for the Jets, depending on what they do in the draft here. But
well, and you know, I said they drafted him third round last year, but I guess it was a different GM that did that, wasn't it? That was the previous regime. It was not Joe Douglas who came in after the draft as a Jets GM. So the people are not as tied. The people who run the Jets are not as tied to Edoga as his draft status might suggest.
Yeah, and look, we've mentioned on the show before, but the Jets went 7-6 when Sam Darnold was in the lineup last year, and that included a pretty rocky week one performance from Darnold, and obviously a couple of rocky performances early on there, but they finished strong, and they were, again, they went 7-6 when they had their starting quarterback in the lineup as opposed to Luke Falk.
They were 6-2 in the second half of the season. Just nobody noticed because it was so much drama for one reason or another being directed at Adam Gase. Now, it's not to me, roster-wise, it's not a 6-2 level type of talent team. I mean, they've got some holes to fill. But your point, I agree with the sentiment overall, which is that things have gone better so far in New York than people realize.
Well, let's go down to Miami here. Miami cleared the books last year, had a bit of a reset season there, and now they're spending, and they obviously have draft capital as well. But let's talk about what they did on the defensive side of the ball, because obviously they brought in Brian Flores as the head coach, and you'd think it's something of a defense-first approach here. But they spent. They brought guys in. They brought in Byron Jones, Kyle Van Noy, Shaq Lawson, Emmanuel Ogba, and Alandon Roberts. Let's start with Byron Jones, who... It's almost still a little bit head scratching that the Cowboys were. I understand they had other guys to sign, they had other stuff going on, but it just feels like it's been a foregone conclusion for the past like calendar year that the Cowboys just weren't going to try to retain Byron Jones.
I think one issue with Byron Jones is his value is as a man-to-man defender or a matchup defender, which Dallas had him do a lot, but Dallas still, and I don't know what they'll be under Mike Nolan, but in recent years they've done a lot of zone stuff, and I think they felt Jones was limited at certain things in zone coverage. He really could only play that outside position that he plays. Now, Miami's not a zone defense. They're a man-to-man defense, and I imagine Jones will travel with the opposing number one receiver or probably the biggest receiver, and Xavien Howard will take the smaller receiver because those guys are both quality corners. So I understand why the Dolphins did this. I agree with you that Dallas didn't, it didn't feel like they valued Jones. Like if you told me I could have Byron Jones or Amari Cooper head to head, which do you want? I think I'm probably taking Byron Jones in that equation, but it never felt like that was much consideration, at least from where we're sitting. It didn't feel like that with Dallas.
Yeah. And we'll talk about Dallas in a little bit. And we did mention last week how Dallas, look, they have addressed the cornerback position in the draft the last couple of years, and maybe they're comfortable with one of those young guys stepping up, or who knows, they might spend another draft pick relatively high on a cornerback this year. But
I think it'll be that one, Gary, because the guys you're referring to, Chidobe Awuzie and Jordan Lewis, they're both, I believe, in the final years of their rookie deal right now.
Yep. Kyle Van Noy. Interesting pickup for Miami here. Obviously familiar to Brian Flores, and one of those things where it's just kind of nice to steal a valuable guy away from a division rival, and perhaps this is more rivalry than it's been in a long time. But yeah, they get to plug Kyle Van Noy into this defense here.
He can do a lot for you. He is very versatile, and what really stood out in the second half of last season, because when you think of Van Noy, you think of that versatility, that almost anything that's important in football that doesn't have a statistic representing it, Van Noy is great at that. He is the ultimate read between the lines, do the dirty work type of guy, and I think he can still make plays that show up on paper as well. So in the second half of last season, what really stood out is his pass rushing got a lot better. He has become almost a bendable pass rusher. He's not going to be an edge burner ever, but he's a smart technician. He's a very patient pass rusher. All those Patriot guys are. He sets up his moves extremely well. So they have a better pass rusher here than what people realize. If you sign him and you pay him for the versatility, the pass rush is almost a bonus. But they badly needed the pass rush help, Gary, because I think Miami's sub package last year, the dime that they played late in the year. They did a 4-1, or actually, no, they did a 1-4 dime, I believe it was. One defensive lineman, four linebackers. It didn't matter what it was. None of those guys could rush the passer. Yeah. They had absolutely no pass rush and third down and long type situations. Van Noy at least gives them a little bit of help there. And if I'm the Dolphins, I'm telling Shaq Lawson, hey, pay close attention to Van Noy, because your only chance to be a great player in this league, or be even, you wouldn't say this to him, but your chance to be a quality starter in this NFL, it'll come from you being a technician and using your hands, because you're not a dynamic athlete. Van Noy, you got to be that kind of guy mechanically to thrive in the NFL. And Lawson, of course, is who the Dolphins just signed over from Buffalo.
Yeah, Van Noy, Lawson, and Agba. And again, it feels like they're building the same way that the Patriots built their defense. You get great on the back end. You know, you have Byron Jones and Xavier Howard. That's one of the best corner tandems in the league. They have some work to do up the middle still, but it is the middle of the rebuild. But yeah, I mean, this feels like, you know, I think at this point in the league, if you can build your coverage out first, if you can sort of completely lock that down, that's the way to go. But like we've talked about this, it's tough to, because if you are building coverage first, you can't have a hole in your coverage. Whereas if you are going pass rusher, maybe you just get that Khalil Mack, you get that superstar pass rusher, and that guy alone can be a difference maker, even if he's surrounded by mediocrity. You can't really do that on the back end. If you have like one or two superstars and then three kind of mediocre, crummy guys, now you have...
Yeah. It's a great point. Yeah, it's harder to hide your weaknesses on the back end than up on the front end, for sure. That's an excellent point. And Miami, a big guy for them this year will be Eric Rowe, another former Patriot. Mm-hmm. He actually played slot corner for them a few years ago. He's not that kind of build. He's a long-bodied guy, if people remember. He was brought into the league as an outside corner, but he played strong safety for them down the stretch last season and matched up to tight ends. If they can get consistency from him, that'll be a big deal for that. That's a huge deciding piece for that defense. And the other thing is Nick Needham, who was their starting corner and really became their number one guy last year. I think he is really built well for the slot. He didn't do it a whole lot. He did it a little bit in 2019, but his body type, his style of play, his sense for the ball and traffic, I think Needham has a chance to be a really high-level slot defender. And now that Jones is here, you can slide Needham in there full-time and have him just focus on that position.
And, I mean, again, they have the three first-round picks here coming up. You figure they'll get a quarterback, and they might get some help elsewhere. They might jump up to get their quarterback. Just real quick on the outside of the ball, and we're going to talk about some of the other veteran running backs who moved around the league. But I was happy for Jordan Howard. I thought Jordan Howard was going to be like the all-time poster boy for running backs who get sort of screwed over by the current structure of the NFL with rookie deals, because he's a guy who has been a quality player. He's made less than $4 million total in his first four seasons, and I wasn't sure if he was going to get anything significant on the open market this year, but he ends up getting a pretty solid deal, almost $5 million guaranteed here for a two-year deal in Miami. And look, he's limited, but he is a good early down back.
Absolutely. He is a sustaining back. He's an excellent zone runner inside and outside. And they didn't have a sustaining running game at all last season. That was another problem with the Dolphins. And a lot of that was their offensive line. But, and I don't mean to pick on the guy. I saw this stat the other day because I was going through my Dolphins film notes the other day. And Kalen Ballage, his longest run, he had 73 carries on the season, if I recall, 73 or 74. His longest run was 8 yards, and his average yards per carry was 1.8, which is the lowest. He's the only guy ever to have 60-plus carries and average less than 2 yards a carry. And I'm not saying it's all him, but the point is they needed somebody that could sustain a run game for him, because they just had no foundational element at all on the ground last season.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, let's go to the defending champs for the past, 70 years or so, and that's the Patriots. Obviously, Tom Brady is no longer there. The big news is Brian Hoyer is now back in New England. So at the moment, it's Jarrett Stidham, Brian Hoyer and Cody Kessler on the Patriots depth chart. We don't know a whole lot about Stidham at this point, obviously. I mean, he's a guy who played at Auburn. There's some physical talent there, good arm talent, pretty good athlete. Played in kind of a mismatched system there in Auburn, and I think that sort of held him back at the collegiate level. But he's a guy who saw it. I mean, look, my memory of his rookie year was when he went in mop-up duty against the Jets, threw a couple of passes, the third or fourth one was a pick six, and they yanked him again in what was a lopsided game. It was one of those Luke Falk starts, and they yanked him and put Tom Brady back in for the rest of garbage time.
Yep. I've only seen it happen one other time. I think it was Ken Wisenhunt in Arizona once pulled as a head coach. He pulled the starters and then had to put them back in later. It's unusual to see that. Mm-hmm. That's all I know about Stidham as well. I actually watched that play a couple times the other day again. My guess, Gary, we don't know what Bill Belichick, we technically don't know what he is as a coach without Brady at this point. I mean, I know he coached in Cleveland, but that was a whole other era of football. He's only had Brady as his quarterback in this era of the NFL. I'd be willing to bet with a pretty large degree of confidence that Belichick's attitude is, give me a guy that runs the designs correctly. I trust Josh McDaniels, our coordinator. I trust our special teams. I think our defense can keep him at 20 points or below. I just want a guy that won't screw it up at quarterback. I can live with that. Give me that guy. So the first trait is he doesn't screw it up. The second trait we need is he maybe makes some plays. But first and foremost, I want the guy that doesn't screw it up. I'm willing to bet that's his attitude about the quarterback position. And it's just, that's the framework you have to think of going into camp. So a lot of teams might say, well, it's Stidham's a year ahead. You know, he's the guy you want to develop. Brian Hoyer's, you're not going to get anything long-term with him. Unless they are really confident on Stidham's upside, and maybe they are, but if they're not super confident on that, I think this will be a neck-to-neck. If it's just these guys for now theory, I think it's a neck-to-neck quarterback competition.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you might be right, which is it just seems absurd to say. And look, they still have the draft. Obviously, Cody Kessler being on the roster isn't going to preclude them if they get together and decide maybe they do like Andy Dalton. Maybe they want to see Cam Newton's physical and see if they can bring him in. But
well, the problem is those are not guys that just. They're not guys you can say don't screw it up to. I mean, Dalton will screw it up at times. Dalton, you need to just. Dalton's a hard one because he has the negative plays. Newton, you don't know what you're getting. I can guarantee you Belichick doesn't want unpredictability from his passer. And Jameis Winston, it's the same. It's kind of both of those issues. So the more I think about it, I bet New England doesn't really razzle you with who they have at quarterback this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, the defense is set up to win a championship. And I don't know. I don't know how long the window stays open. I know it's crazy to say that now, and I know it's Belichick, and I know Belichick doesn't ever have bad defenses, but this is a historically great defense potentially. They were last season. Maybe they will continue that again this season, but you know, we've seen whether it's the Broncos or you know, even the Bears 2018 and 2019, you know, 2018 they got all those turnovers they didn't in 2019. It just doesn't typically that's not something that typically repeats year to year.
The Van Noy loss is a big deal, and so is losing Jamie Collins. Those were two of their really valuable players because they provided all the versatility up front and versatile defensive fronts. You could argue that's actually the defining trait of New England's defense, more so than the lockdown man coverage. I'm not saying that's the case, but I think that's a reasonable discussion you can have. I think this defense is going to take a step back this season, Gary.
All right, let's quick hit a couple other teams that were pretty notable during the first week of free agency here. We'll start in Dallas, and we mentioned Byron Jones gone, also Malik Collins, Robert Quinn, Jeff Heath, all out of there. They bring in Gerald McCoy, they bring in Ha Ha Clinton Dix at safety. I don't know, this they're obviously, they can't be done at this point. They need someone for that right side of the defensive line, but the secondary's a little worse off. I don't know. What do you think of Gerald McCoy at this point?
I think he can still get north and south through the B gap for you from time to time. I don't think he'll do it every single snap, but he's not washed up yet. So he fits if they're going to play up front the way they have been playing, which again, we don't know if they will with Mike Nolan there, but let's say they do. McCoy fits that one gap 4-3 penetrating type of approach. And I think Clinton Dix at safety can also fit what they want to do, because Mike Nolan, in his heart of hearts, he wants to deploy his safeties as attack weapons. He doesn't want to just have a guy sitting back there as a safety blanket securing middle field. Remember, last time we saw Mike Nolan calling a defense, I believe it was in Atlanta several years ago, and there were plays where he would drop Croy Bierman, their defensive lineman, all the way back to free safety because he wanted to do these radical aggressive coverage disguises and pressure packages with them. So he knew he was rolling the dice when he did that, but he doesn't view the some coaches like Earl Thomas was a favorite of some of those Seahawks coaches because they want to know that we've got a guy in the back end that's going to prevent us from giving up a play more than 25 yards. The worst case scenario will not happen against us if Earl Thomas is in there. We're not giving up the huge touchdown. Nolan doesn't view the safety position that way. At least he didn't last time we saw him. He says, I don't want to just give up an Earl Thomas to sit back in center field. I want to go make plays with that guy. We'll take our chances. I think Clinton Dix is that. You need to be that kind of approach with Clinton Dix because he's not a reliable read and react defender. He's a physical specimen, though. And if you can put him on a one-path mission, having him go downhill, I think that's the best way to use him.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they had some big issues up in the middle of that defense late last year. Now, getting a healthy Leighton Van Der Esch maybe correct some of those, but they were struggling just to tackle in some of these late-season games here. Let's stay in the NFC East, the defending champs, the Eagles. Not a huge quantity of guys are bringing in here, but they make the trade for Darius Slay. They bring in Javon Hargrave to, we would imagine, be more of a penetrator here in this defense. And it seems like that's kind of what the doctor ordered with this defense.
It's a good defense. It's a chance to be a very good defense. Derek Barnett's back healthy on the edges. Brandon Graham will probably be here. He'll be here this year. I think they'll cut him after this season for his cap number, but he's here one more year. Fletcher Cox, of course, is still elite. We're back to seeing potentially, because of Hargrave and what he gives you, we're back to seeing a dynamic four-man rush from Philadelphia. And then I think they have some depth there too with Jannard Avery and Josh Sweat on the edges. Malik Jackson will be the interesting piece. If he can give them anything, he'll be gone after this year as well with Graham for salary purposes. But we just said seven guys there. And if it all goes well, which is a big if in the NFL, but if it all goes well, that's what Philadelphia was built on. It's having a rotation of dynamic one gap attacking defensive linemen.
Let's go the NFC North. A couple of teams with pretty significant changes in the past week. Now, we mentioned the Vikings. Obviously, they trade Stephon Diggs. They end up getting a good haul of picks. It was not the DeAndre Hopkins type deal. But the Vikings, they move on from Linval Joseph, Xavier Rhodes, Trey Waynes goes to Cincinnati on a big deal. Everson Griffin is, at the time of our taping, not signed, but it sounds like he is definitely not coming back to Minnesota. And they tagged Anthony Harris, but reports are that they want to trade him because that's the franchise tag, I guess. They bring in Michael Pierce from Baltimore, but I mean, the linebackers are still there. Harrison Smith is still there, but this is and Danielle Hunter, I should say, but this is a much different looking defense, and that has really been the identity of this team for the past couple of seasons.
Absolutely. Continuity and veteran awareness on defense have been the defining traits of this whole organization, and now they're minus a bunch of guys. I mean, they don't have corners right now. It's Mike Hughes, and that's about it. Maybe Holton Hill can be a number two corner, maybe, but they need at least two more corners. Remember, Mike Zimmer, two things about him. He prefers to rotate at corner. Two is he doesn't like to play young guys at corner. Yeah. He's going to have to do at least one of those two things. Yep. He's going to have to play somebody young this year. Harris will be a big loss if they do trade him. They don't have any depth at safety behind him. Their D-line, they need a couple bodies there as well because, you know, I like Ifedi Odenigbo at defensive end, but I want someone, I want him at defensive tackle in pass situations if I can have my choice. So they need an edge rusher. Those guys aren't cheap in that kind of scheme. They need the type of edge rusher that can, it doesn't have to be an edge, I mean, they have a great one in Hunter. They don't need an elite one per se, but they've got to have a formidable, solid 285-pound athletic defensive end. Those are not easy to find.
Yeah, and again, on the back end, you mentioned lack of depth at safety. If they move on from Harris, Andrew Sendejo, who's sort of been the fallback option there the last couple of years, he is gone. He's in Cleveland now. So, boy, a lot of questions. Holton Hill's interesting because he would seem like a schematic fit. He's a guy who... certainly a very good talent at the college level. He fell because of some character concerns. So maybe they found something in him, but, man, you look at what they have right now and it looks like, you know, fourth week of the preseason type of secondary here.
Well, and then on offense, they need a couple of guards. I think Pat Elflein needs to at least be challenged in camp, if not replaced. And, Drew Samia was their fourth round pick a year ago. I don't know anything about him because he wasn't on the field last year, but you know, those are their guards, and it's an outside zone running scheme. That guard position is critical in that kind of a scheme. And then at wide receiver, because of the Diggs trade, they have no depth there at all. We don't think about it because they didn't play with, they only had two guys on the field at that position for most of the snaps last year. But as it stands right now, it's Adam Thielen and that's about it. So it's not just that they need some help. They've got gaping holes on both sides of the ball.
Yeah. I mean, they obviously picked up draft picks here. They'll have five in the top 105 of this draft, and two of those are first rounders. But it seems like just a ton of holes here to fill in Minnesota. Let's go to Chicago, and they do it. They go and get Nick Foles, and look, the way this this free agency period and the upcoming summer is going to play out, it seems like a lot of teams are preparing for what would be a shortened mini camp and training camp, and there's just not going to be time to get everyone up to speed like there has been in the past. So that's maybe why you saw the Panthers go after Teddy Bridgewater, who is familiar with I'm already blanking on his name.
Joe Brady.
I know it's a whole new staff there, but that's a rough start to the new Panthers coaching staff there. But obviously, this staff, Matt Nagy's staff, has some familiarity with Nick Foles, so they go and get him. He would seem to be a guy who could be assimilated a lot more easily than maybe some of the other guys on the market there. But how do you size this up at this point, Andy? Because we've talked about Trubisky plenty the last two seasons. You just don't know where the ball is going to end up when he drops back. I don't think Nick Foles is the model of consistency here, but is it sort of the lesser of two evils?
Yeah, it might be. It might be when you put it that way. You could probably do a little more. You could run more of your scheme with Foles and with Trubisky, I'm guessing. At least I'm guessing that would be Matt Nagy's perspective on that right now. This will be the quarterback competition that's talked about all offs. Every year there's one, it seems like, and this will be the one this year.
Yeah, I have said unforgivably mean things about Mitchell Trubisky. You wonder if it will, if the switch will flip at some point. I mean, I do remember Drew Brees two seasons into his career being the worst quarterback in football, and it just sort of, you know, it just sort of clicked for him before that third season. This would be Trubisky's third season in that system. Maybe it's about to click. I certainly wouldn't bet on that based on what we've seen so far, but that's the other thing in Chicago. They don't have the luxury of being patient. That defense is ready to play for a championship right now, and you can't trust that, you know, basically building with 11 guys on that side of the ball. That's not something you can sustain for too long. We see it time and time again across the league, and they got to get that quarterback position right if they're going to play for a championship. The Chargers.
I didn't know that. Breeze's QB rating his first year as a starter, which was his second year of his career, was 76.9.
He was awful.
He averaged, 205 yards passing a game. The next year, he regressed 191 yards a game at 67.5 rating. The Chargers went 2-9 that year. It was 2003, so I don't remember what happened there. But those were his first couple, and then he kind of picked up and became Drew Brees for the most part, but not, you know.
And it was not a coaching change either. It wasn't the kind of thing where it's like new system came in. It was Cam Cameron those years. If you saw Drew Brees his second season, you would have absolutely said this guy can't play. And had he been in like a larger market with higher expectations, I mean, who knows how his career would have played out. I don't think they would have been patient with him.
That's an interesting point. So Gary Grambling is declaring Mitchell Trubisky to be the next Drew Brees.
I'm gonna go the complete other way with it now. Let's talk about the Chargers as long as we're there. They were aggressive here. I don't know how much people notice the Chargers anymore, but obviously they went after Tom Brady. They didn't come up with him. They say they're going to go with Tyrod. I would imagine they're going to get one in the draft, and then we'll see when they make the changeover. But they go and get Chris Harris and Linval Joseph for this defense. All of a sudden, you also got Derwin James coming back healthy. So now you got Chris Harris and Casey Hayward on the back end there with Derwin James, Linval Joseph to sort of shore up that run defense there. And obviously we've said for years they have issues on the offensive line. They traded for Trey Turner, and now they signed Brian Bulaga. I'm not saying those guys are world beaters, but certainly better than they've had up there. And if they find the answer at quarterback, this is suddenly a really interesting team.
Well, so they've made four notable free agent signings. You just kind of ran through them. Turner and Bulaga. Mm-hmm. And those are both veteran guys. You plug them in now. They're probably higher-end veteran guys, which suggests a win-now mentality. Now, the counter to that would be the Chargers were so snake-bit by poor offensive line play the last few years that they're just overcorrecting, understandably so, overcorrecting with veteran players to get that thing figured out. But then you look at their defense, Linval Joseph was brought in, Chris Harris was brought in, guys in their very late 20s, early 30s, somewhere around there, more win now type of signings. So in all appearances, Gary, this team is trying to win the AFC West. Everyone's trying to win their division, but they're building the roster accordingly, trying to win right now, except that they don't have the quarterback. If any coach in the NFL were to go with Tyrod Taylor, I could see Anthony Lynn being the guy, because I think Lynn really values mobility at the quarterback position. And Taylor, for all his limitations, he obviously does give you some mobility. And you don't have to be Lamar Jackson to make Anthony Lynn happy, but you can do more in your running game with a mobile QB, and I bet you that's something Anthony Lynn is eager to do. So I'm not saying they wouldn't take a QB. I certainly would in their position. But if there were any team that I could believe is actually saying the truth and they say Tyrod could be our guy, it probably would be the Chargers.
Yeah. You do kind of wonder, like, that hypothetical, had they landed Brady. Had they landed Brady, maybe they don't chase some of these other guys. But, if you have the quarterback and then you can sort of fill out that offensive line in the draft. And, I hate to be the guy just, like, checking boxes like, that this is all the answers are right there on paper. But, it's a really interesting team that they're building there in Los Angeles and new stadium. And, we'll see if the new stadium's ready.
I wouldn't be surprised because of that new stadium. I wouldn't be surprised if this team made a big move to trade up and get a splashy name QB. They probably can't get Burrow from Cincinnati, I'm guessing. I bet the Bengals would not do that trade. But I think they're going to go for a big-name quarterback in the draft.
Yeah, you could. I mean, look, they're picking six. They could very easily hop up to two or three if they're willing to pay the price. And whether it's Tua or Herbert, they can get their guy. We got to do one.
And I would think it'd be Tua, by the way, for that conversation.
Yeah. We used to, when we first started doing the show, Andy, we used to do a segment. I can't remember what I titled it, but it was something along the lines of the fantasy dork, and I'd ask you a fantasy related question. But this is kind of this segment of the show right here, because I'm going to ask you about the two running backs who are not quite what they had been. And let's start with Todd Gurley, obviously let go by the Rams, signing with the Falcons. I suppose you would say physical pending with all these guys. But Gurley to Atlanta, obviously we know Todd Gurley is not the Todd Gurley of a couple seasons ago, but I mean, do they have a quality starting back here for the Falcons?
Remains to be seen. We'll see. I think everybody's certainly rooting for that with Gurley. He's very well liked. He's a smart, studious guy. He's a team first type of player. And when he's been good, he's been really good. So you're rooting for that. You're hoping to see it. Arthritic knee conditions are a hard thing to deal with, and it's evident on film that he's not quite the same runner that mm-hmm. he used to be. He doesn't trust his lateral cuts, or he doesn't plant his knee the same way he used to. So, you know, I'm not overly optimistic, but I am certainly rooting for him, and I like that Atlanta is at least rolling the dice on it.
And Melvin Gordon to Denver, kind of a bigger money investment than we expected to see. It's you know, the deal doesn't break the bank here, but it was just kind of surprising because Philip Lindsay's been great there. Royce Freeman has been a good enough sort of number two back there, but it seems like they are bringing in Gordon with the thought of Gordon being whatever you want to call it, bell cow back, leader of the committee, whatever it is. Whereas, I mean, Philip Lindsay, I think is better than Melvin Gordon.
I don't necessarily disagree with you. I think Gordon can take more of a load, and that means something. But mm-hmm. Lindsay's a good player. Lindsay is extremely good, and he's not just an outside runner. He looks like it because he's shifty, small, and fast and quick and all that stuff. Lindsay can run inside. Remember Warwick Dunn years ago was like that. Yeah. He was little, but he ran really well inside. I think Lindsay is, and I don't remember Warwick Dunn detailed enough to know if Lindsay's a comparison, but Lindsay can run the ball inside. So I'm with you on that. I was surprised about the Gordon move, and I was a little surprised at the amount of money he got. I mean, 2 years, $16 million with Denver, $13.5 million guaranteed. That's more than I would have guessed he would have earned this year.
That's it's a lot for a running back. I'm glad running backs get paid. It's a tough spot for them, but it's a big investment. Andy, before we wrap up, let's just hit a couple of the guys who, at the time of our taping on Sunday evening, are still available, and I will just sort of throw them out there, and you tell me why. Let's try and solve these mysteries. A couple of corners we'll start with. Logan Ryan. I can't believe Logan Ryan is still sitting on the open market.
I can't either. And I don't know if his asking price is too high. Logan Ryan can play the slot. He can play outside. He can do it in man. He can do it in zone. He's a great blitzer. He's a willing run defender. He's a smart player. Logan Ryan is... there's going to be some team that signs him. It'll probably be for a one-year type of deal, and they're going to get a lot better in a lot of areas in their secondary just by plugging him in.
Jimmy Smith, and I will admit, I was shocked to see today that Jimmy Smith is 31. He'll be 32 in July. I was still picturing him as a guy in like his late 20s, but Jimmy mm-hmm. Smith's still sitting out there.
Well, Jimmy Smith only likes to play right corner, so he is almost the opposite of Ryan in that he's just not very versatile. Now, he's a good right corner. He's a long-bodied guy, but when you get to be that age, I didn't realize he was that old either, but when you're that age, the lack of versatility becomes a little bit of a yeah. problem because the teams can go after you then. It's not like he's going to move to safety and everything's going to be okay, so... that's probably the deal with Jimmy Smith. I wouldn't be surprised if Baltimore isn't still considering bringing him back either. He also strikes me as some of those guys, and I don't know why I'm saying this, but some guys, and he's not an example, because remember like Hugh Douglas, he went and signed a big deal in Jacksonville, and I believe he wound up right back in Philadelphia shortly after that. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Defensive end?
Yeah.
There's a few guys that have done that. Patrick Chung went to Philly for a year and then was back in New England. Some guys take that one-year hiatus in free agency and then just wind up back to the team they were on because they just so perfectly fit that system and culture. Now, no one's going to pay Jimmy Smith big free agent money this year, but I think he's a Raven is what I'm getting at.
Okay.
I think I could see if he leaves, I could see him coming back to Baltimore one day.
That's good. That's a compliment. That's a good thing to be called. A couple of receivers here. Look, I get Robbie Anderson has some baggage in his past, and maybe that's sort of making people hesitant. I think more than anything with this wide receiver market, you're seeing the result of the really deep receiver rookie class coming up, and I think a lot of teams are just saying we'll roll the dice on those guys. But I don't know. I think Robbie Anderson is going to be just a great player for someone, and I know the Jets like him, so I'm guessing it's just going to be a matter of his price coming down at some point, But I was surprised that someone didn't swoop in and get him.
Same here. Robbie Anderson, I keep waiting. Okay, Robbie Anderson, they'll figure him out. Press coverage will take him away. You roll a safety, and what's he got left? Because he doesn't look the part. I mean, he's skinny as a rail. But that guy makes contested catches. He gets off the ball well. I don't think he gets out-physicaled as much. I don't think he gets out-physicaled a whole lot. He's a good wide receiver. He's as good as his numbers suggest. So kind of there's another one that's going to be really good value for someone because of what you described with the wide receiver class. I could see a team drafting a receiver, signing Anderson to a one-year prove-it deal, and Anderson just throttles the guy in a training camp battle and becomes the number two or number one receiver on that team.
And Breshad Perriman, I thought was, you know, sort of second act, late bloomer here. And I'm just kind of bummed out that he's still sitting on the open market because he took that deal in Tampa after he had, you know, he had signed with Cleveland, or I should say agreed to a deal with Cleveland last year. And then when they made the Odell Beckham trade, he basically said, well, I'm not going to play here, so I'd rather go elsewhere. And then he signed the one-year deal, and he you know, it's a prove-it deal, and he sort of did prove it.
Second half of the season, yeah. He was like top five productive, one of the five most productive receivers in football. He's that kind of numbers.
Speaking of fantasy dorks, like, he won some fantasy championships for people out there last year, and I know I thought he was going to get paid somewhere. I'm not saying he's a number one receiver, but I think he's a quality starting receiver, especially if you want that speed element in your offense.
Well, and I mean, and in Cleveland, the second half of that Cleveland season, I think it was the second half, there was a stretch there in Cleveland where he was looking the part as well. Like, oh, this is kind of the guy Baltimore was hoping he would be. My problem, and maybe this is just, it could just completely be me. For one, it's probably the market that's dictating that he's not signed right now. Like you said, the draft issue and all the receivers available. In my mind's eye, though, if you said, what is Breshad Perriman? I'm not sure I can give you a great idea. I don't think he's quite an X receiver, whereas a big-bodied, win-on-an-island type of guy. And I don't see him in my mind's eye as a shifty Z receiver either, where you move him around and do a lot with him. I'm not. Obviously, he can play. We've seen that. And it could be me. It very well could be me. You know, you don't see everything out of every guy, but I don't know what he is off the top of my head.
And Jadeveon Clowney, it seems like it's a combination of, you know, whether you believe the reports that he wants upwards of $20 million annually. I think it's that plus the, you know, the health concerns, and obviously people can't get him in for their team doctors to get their hands on him because of the pandemic going on right now. And it seems like that is sort of conspiring to keep him unsigned to this point.
Charles Woodson, years ago, before he joined Green Bay, he stayed unsigned for a long time. I think he went into April as a free agent. Maybe we can Google around while we're thinking of this. And Woodson wound up getting big money with the Packers anyway. So, you know, it's not over for Clowney, but he might have to wind up taking a one-year deal and then trying again next year when there's not a coronavirus going around.
Yeah. And then we got we talked about Andy Dalton a little bit earlier and maybe why the, you know, very limited now number of teams looking for a quarterback might not want to go with him. But Jameis Winston, obviously 30-30 club last year. We know what he does well and what he doesn't do well. But, you know, still a youngish guy. I mean, I think he's a fit in, like, I think he'd be great in Pittsburgh. I think if the Steelers brought him in and maybe tried to mold him into an heir apparent for Ben in 2 or 3 years, I think that makes some sense. But he seems like kind of the odd man out here in the quarterback carousel.
And it's, someone's going to be. I mean, that's just what happens. I think you know, is he one of the 32 best QBs in the NFL? Yeah, probably. For what he is, though, the negative plays are too impactful at times. So he's a guy, you plug him in and run your system. He's kind of a caretaker, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I know people don't like the term, but that's what he is. But you can't have a caretaker that then will have a 3 or 4 interception game every once in a while, or will botch a screen pass. There's a lot of things, that little things that you can't always be sure are going to go completely right there. By the way, that Woodson deal, it was in 2006, 7-year contract. April 26th, he signed that. Or that's when they reported. So that's around draft time.
Yeah.
7 years, up to $52 million in Green Bay. I believe he fulfilled all of that. That's a, at the time, that was a really rich deal for a player. So it's happened before. Guys have gotten a mega contract super late in free agency.
Yeah, I mean, we still got lots of time to go here. Someone can go blow Logan Ryan or Robbie Anderson out of the water here with an offer. You can still get those guys. They're great players. They're available. Sign them. It's the end of my rant. Andy, once again, thanks for coming back and joining us. Hopefully, we'll have you again in future weeks here. But I feel this is just goodbye for now.
All right, I'll talk to you when I talk to you.
The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is me, Gary Gramling. Special thanks once again to Andy Benoit for joining me this week. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Ravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL Podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.